Members, we're going to get started. You know, this session is going to be a short one. And of course, none of us can resist the temptation to do good legislation. So there's bills that are being constantly introduced, which means that in a short session, we're going to have to be very efficient in how we proceed and do good quality conversations and vetting at the same time that we move quickly forward. So in that vein, I'd like to get us started here, and I'm already behind a few minutes. So members, welcome to the second half of, I believe, Representative Erickson, this is the 88th legislative session of our state. So welcome back to that. Today we have three bills in front of us. We have a bill from Representative Murphy, Representative Murphy M, Representative Slocum, and then Representative Murphy E. It is the chair's intent that we hear the first two bills and lay those over for possible inclusion in an omnibus policy bill. And so I don't want to spend a ton of time in the first two bills. I want to make sure the authors get a chance to explain those. We ask a few questions, and then we move on. The third bill will require action today, and so I want to make sure that we get to that. We have a good ample time to have a healthy conversation about that, and we have at least a half a dozen amendments on the desk on that bill, so I want to make sure we fully vet those. So with that, I'm going to ask Representative Murphy M to come forward, and Representative Murphy, I'm going to move that House File 1964. And members, you know, I've been giving you, all the chairs have been giving you directions from the Rules Committee. A number of us are scratching our heads, quite frankly, because apparently we can't no longer move to pass bills. We can only move to refer bills. And quite frankly, as someone who served here for, you know, over 20 years, I don't know why we would not ask our committees for their thoughts on whether a bill ought to become a law or not, and defer to another committee that has nothing to do often with the issues that we do, but there's my vetting. So the motion before us at this point will be that that House File 1964, the chair moves, be referred to the committee on K-12, no, to the general register. But that's a later motion. The motion right now is to move the House File 1964 be referred to the general registry. And I'll be amending that amendment or that motion a little bit later. Representative Murphy, 15 minutes. Come and tell us about your bill. If you have witnesses, have them come forward at this point as well, and then we'll entertain questions, and then we'll be amending that to lay the bill over. Good morning.
Good morning. And Mr. Chair, thanks so much for listening to me on Tuesday, and then last night I found out, I'm on the agenda. And
I take you seriously.
And so I called my friend that is very interested in the issue at 9:30 last night and said, George, I know that you can't come tomorrow, but I wanted to tell you the bill is up. And he said, oh gosh, what time? But George wasn't able to come, but he gave me information that I needed. But I want to take you kind of on a personal journey today. The North Shore Community School is a charter school now. It's on Lake Superior, located between Duluth and Two Harbors in Lake Superior School District in Duluth Township in St. Louis County in Legislative District 3B for 1 year. And 53 years ago, I was a brand new teacher driving my little brand new Ford Falcon from my home that I've always lived in Hermantown. I was born into it, 30 miles away. I was driving my Ford Falcon to my first teaching job in Clover Valley in Duluth Township. It was the 7 through 12 high school. That was before middle schools. The students that got into the seventh grade were from the North Shore Community School, elementary school. They were part of the St. Louis County Unorganized School Districts at the time. There were tons of St. Louis County schools at that time. Not tons, but in the teens. And I started my first teaching job with 8 preps. I had a preparation period for 1 hour every other week. I taught 7 classes a day, and I had a study hall. But that was only because I taught 10th, 11th, 12th grade social studies. I taught 7th grade math. I taught 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th grade health. I taught 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th grade, 11th and 12th grade FIET. And I had been assigned 7th grade math, 7th grade science for 1 period a day. Finally, the teacher that was regularly teaching the 7th grade science, who had a study hall, said after about 3 weeks, "I think maybe you're a little overloaded. And I'll take the science class if you take the study hall." I'm not still sure that I got the better part of the deal, but it was a little bit easier anyway. I stayed in that job for 3 years. And then I went to the city. A teaching job at Duluth Central, where I stayed for 33 years as a teacher. But those first 3 years, I became part of that community up the shore. Later, the St. Louis County Schools got a little bit smaller, and Two Harbors, Lake Superior School District, consolidated Clover Valley. And Clover Valley High School closed. And the elementary school stayed on for a few years. But then the Lake Superior School District closed North Shore Elementary. And then the legislature passed charter schools, the laws for charter schools. And that community up the North Shore felt so strongly about keeping their kids in the community rather than sending them 20 miles away to Two Harbors, that they formed the North Shore Community School. Wolf Ridge Nature Center is their sponsor. They have worked very hard, and the people that I taught in 1961 through 1964 are the grandparents, and in a few cases the great-grandparents, of the kids that are going, some of the kids that are going to North Shore Community School today. Last year I visited North Shore after I became the representative for that area, the state representative for that area. The area that I had started my adult career in. Now I had the privilege of representing them because of the redistricting. And that new district contains Hermantown and Duluth Township and Two Harbors. I'm back with the people I started my adulthood with. And they're saying, "We love this little school." And the community people, some of them that were there now, were there when I was there as parents, they are the homesteaders. They're in the senior club called the Homesteaders. And if there's anything that needs to be done at that North Shore Community School, the homesteaders are there to help. And if there's repairs to be made, there's a work crew that regularly can be called on to volunteer their time to do some of the work to help that school get along. And when there's grandparents' days or there's lunches for the community people to come and visit with the kids, the place is packed, as well as the concerts and all that kind of thing. And the focus of the part of the mission of the community school is nature, just as the sponsor's focus is nature and environment. And that school has trails in the back, and they have things going on. They have a garden. They have things going on outside as well as inside. But I have two stories. When the day I went there, there was this little girl, tiny little girl, second grader. Her name was Miss May. That's how she was introduced to me by the principal, who had just had a talk with her about what her job was. Her job was to do her work and stop daydreaming. And it was just like the carpenter has to do their work. Her job wasn't to skip anything or to sleep in, but she had responsibility. And she said, "Yes, Miss Rosa, I'll do what you say." And I know this wasn't the first conversation she had had with the administration. But then she looked at me and said, "What is your job?" And I said, "The best I can do is to listen to Miss Rose and have her tell me what she needs." A little bit later, a young boy came in, darling little kid. He had obviously been notified earlier that I was there. He said, "Representative Murphy, my name is Aaron. I'm a trapper. I have an issue I want you to work on." 10 years old, big brown eyes. And I said, "What is that issue?" And he said, "As I said, I'm a trapper. I trap martens. And I really would like the time period of the marten season to be lengthened." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Miss Murphy, I have a cousin that's not nearly as fortunate as me. He lives in the city, and he doesn't have opportunities. And he would like to be a trapper, but he doesn't even know what trapping is. And if trapping season doesn't extend to at least 2 weekends, there's no opportunity for him to come up here in the country, in the forest, to trap." And at that time, the trapping season was 8 days, and so there weren't 2 weekends. And so his cousin didn't have the opportunity that Aaron had. And he felt that if we trap, if we had a longer season, there would be another opportunity, there would be a time. And I said, "But if you have a longer time, then people will want a bigger limit. More, they would be able to trap more martens." He said, "Oh no, that would not be good conservation policy." He said, "Keep the limit the same, but give us more time so other people, kids, can become trappers." I promised him on the first day of session, I would talk to Representative Dill. And I did. And I talked to Representative Senator Saxon. But they just saw my eyes. They didn't see his big brown eyes. And so the trapping season stayed the same. And I had to tell Aaron that I had failed. I listened to Susan Rose as Miss May asked me to. And Miss Rose said, we have a problem with the lottery. Because all of our community people don't necessarily get picked in the lottery. And we would like to serve, for sure, our community people, as well as other people that want to come in. In March or in April of 2013, I received a letter, and I would like to quote from her, Susan Rose, in the letter. She said, we recently held our lottery for the 2013-14 school year, and sadly, four families within 5 miles from the school did not get in. As you can imagine, they are the heartbroken, as our name says, community school. There are families that did get in who live as far away as West Duluth. That's over 20 miles. I don't know exactly where in West Duluth they live. Again, this continues to be an issue for our little rural school. Unquote. Our little rural school in Duluth Township is asking me to help them again. And so I created this bill very narrowly. It's just for our little girls. And I realize camel's nose under the tent. I realize the slippery slope. I realize. But this little school is indeed the community school. And are trying to achieve the right things for their 324 kids and trying to grow too. I think if the people in the community that live close to the school and that have their heritage in Duluth Township, they should have first dibs on going to the North Shore Community School. And that's what House File 1964 will do. And we will all appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Murphy, and you know, I'm constantly reminded of how big and diverse our state is, and how sometimes one size fits all doesn't quite cut it or work in terms of the different realities that we have across the state. And by the way, I like the homesteaders idea. I think I'm going to talk to my local school, and actually I think we have a homesteaders group. I think they call themselves something different, but you see that spirit all across the state, and it's wonderful to hear that that's happening up at North Shore Community School. I'm going to ask Mr. Piccolo to come down because he's the only, or only he has notified us that he wants to speak on this issue, and I suspect there's a slippery slope, aspect to his testimony. So we'll hear that. Maybe take a question or two, depending on how long Mr. Piccolo goes, and then I'm going to lay this bill over, and then we'll move on. But thank you, Representative Murphy. Mr. Piccolo.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Eugene Piccolo. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. First, we appreciate Representative Murphy's support for North Shore Community School, which has been an outstanding school serving students in northeastern Minnesota. While enrollment preferences always have at their root a noble goal, enrollment preferences can also have unintended consequences. So with that in mind, the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools believes that before the legislature enacts any other enrollment preferences beyond those currently in law, which are for siblings and for children of staff in a charter school, that before any others are put into place, that we look in and do an analysis of the impacts of enrollment preferences so that the preferences do not create unintended consequences that actually undermine the diversity and parental and student choice and result in producing private academies. The bottom line question for charter school community and policymakers are, is how do we address calls for enrollment preferences and maintain the public character of public charter schools? So while we are sympathetic to the intent of the legislation here, we urge that the committee not adopt House File 1964 and that over the next year we look at the calls for additional enrollment preferences, and there are other bills before this legislature for low-income preferences, for founders' preferences, for other preferences that people are putting forward, and look at the broader perspective and consider the collective impact of enrollment preferences on the public character of chartered public schools. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Piccolo. Representative Harris and Sandra has a question, and then I'll close it out with Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, if we were to approve this exception that you want, wouldn't it also be our responsibility to accept this concept for regular K-12 public schools so that parents could have this opportunity if they wanted to send their child to a what I would call a neighborhood school, because I think that's what you have in mind? Wouldn't that also be what we should be doing and not just allow this for a charter?
Representative Murphy or even Mr. Pickett. Representative Murphy, it sounds to me like your intent is really to draft something very specific to a very unique kind of geographic reality here. And I think Representative Erickson's question is an appropriate question, and does, you know, challenge us to think about what will there be kind of broad intent beyond a slippery slope. What is the broad intent issue here? Proceed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I don't know particularly what situations you're talking about, because in my experience, the community school or the neighborhood school has always had the neighborhood kids and the community kids as their first priority. I know in some places there were the kinds of schools that were set up for particular purposes, like a math school or a music school or that kind of school. But even in my experience where that was done, the neighborhood kids were first accepted. So I do know that I do think that you're thinking of areas where there's many more students where perhaps that hasn't, their address doesn't count, and so they're not going to their local schools. But I've always, in my educational experience, been biased toward allowing kids to go to the school that is in their neighborhood first. I don't have an answer to that. A definite yes. But I also believe in school boards' authority and local control. And that was a huge question, Representative said.
We ask good questions in this
community. Yes, you certainly do.
Mr. Bigelow.
Mr. Chair, the language as it's written, it is not specific to North Shore because it's any township, and there are other charter schools in other townships. In fact, we have one in suburban Washington County that is actually in a township where the preference would apply in that case too, and it's a significant school of size. It's St. Croix Prep in Bayport. I believe it's Bayport Township. And so this has implications not just for North Shore School, but other schools across the state, as well as even in the outer ring of the metropolitan area.
Okay, thank you. That's a good clarification. Members, we're going to push ahead. We will come back to this bill. in this session, but at this point the chair is going to move that, amend his motion to move that House File 1964 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus policy bill. Thank you, Representative Murphy.
I appreciate your listening.
Thank you. House File 2010, Representative Slocum, and the chair will move that House File 2010 be referred to the General Registry. This is another bill that we're going to, that the chair will be amending that motion after we have a brief discussion on this. And Representative Slocum, if you have any testifiers, I would ask them to come forward. Obviously, I'm trying to move as quickly as I can, you know, through through bills this session. And so if any other testifiers can be ready to testify as soon as possible. But Representative Slocum, good morning.
Good morning.
We miss
Mr.
you.
Mr. Chair.
We miss you.
Yes. Yes. And I miss this group, too. I really do. Anyway, Mr. Chair, do you want me to go ahead and start?
Please, yes.
All right. I don't have any really great stories. Well, I do, but I'm not going to do them. but the first thing I want to do is I'd like to make an oral amendment to the bill. Did you want me to do that now, Mr. Chair, or would you rather I do it at the...
Representative Slocum, I would prefer we not do oral amendments at this point. We are going to come back to this bill,
okay.
So there'll be an opportunity to do that at that time. But at this point, I prefer we just, you know, hear the bill as is. You know, we do have a 24-hour rule, and I try not to be super stickler on that, but at the same time, I don't want to create a slippery slope when it comes to those kind of issues. So we will have ample time. But you can certainly speak to your oral amendment in terms of the intent of the bill.
Good. That makes me happier.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2010 is about charter schools also. And it this is labeled the UN session, so I take that to mean clean things up a little bit, you know. And this is from the 2009 charter bill that I chief authored, and by the way, is number one in the nation. I just wanted to throw that in.
Very good legislation, Representative Slocum.
It was very good legislation. Anyway, this cleans up and puts a timeline in the authorizer and charter approval process. And currently, the authorizer of a charter school, such as Wolf Ridge, which chartered, put in an affidavit to authorize and charter North Shore Community School. They put in an affidavit, which is a very big and extensive document, stating their intent to charter a school. Then the affidavit has the terms and conditions, the accountability measures. I mean, it's very spelled out exactly what that affidavit includes. How the authorizer intends to oversee fiscal student performance. Anyway, the commissioner of education then approves or disapproves the authorizer's affidavit. And the commissioner, the MDE, has 60 days to do that. 60 business days. So that's, you know, more than 2 months to look over that affidavit, thoroughly go through it, and either approve it or disapprove it. If the commissioner disapproves the affidavit, the commissioner, and commonly affidavits are sent back because they need more fleshing out or there's more information needed, and it's usually smaller items that they discuss, that they send the affidavit back to the authorizer to correct. So the commissioner notifies the authorizer of the deficiencies in the affidavit, and the authorizer has 20 business days then to resubmit and correct the deficiencies. My bill says then that the commissioner has 15, whoops, it says 10, but my oral amendment, or my amendment coming, my is going to say 15 and it's going to say business days, to approve or disapprove the authorizer's reply. Because there was no timeline in the original bill. So what happened was some authorizers resubmitted their augmented affidavit, and it languished or it took longer. So it kind of bogged down the process of approval.
And this just puts a deadline, like every other section of this approval process. This just puts a deadline also on the resubmission. And the MDE, while I realize they have a lot of work to do and that they do their work as best they can, they're not going through the original affidavit again. They're going through the parts that had to be redone or beefed out or augmented. So it's not as though they are going through the volume of the full affidavit. They're going through what needed to be corrected. And I think that 10 here, but hopefully 15 business days should be a good amount of time to then either approve or disapprove. Because after, if the authorizer doesn't address the efficiency, the deficiencies to the affidavit, then the commissioner's satisfaction, they disapprove, and the charter school does not become authorized. So it's a pretty, it's a final kind of thing. And I think that a school, an authorizer, shouldn't have to wait an indefinite period of time to know whether or not they're going to be starting or not. So that's my bill, and I'm open for questions.
Thank you, Representative Slocum. I'm going to ask Mr. Piccolo to come forward. He's also listed himself prior to comment. I would also invite others to wish to comment on this. Mr. Piccolo.
Mr. Chair, members, again, my name is Eugene Piccolo, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. We would like to thank Representative Slocum for bringing forth this legislation. While establishing a deadline for a final decision on an affidavit for a new charter school is really a technical issue, the lack of a final decision date can cause enormous angst and frustration to the group of teachers, parents, and community members who have put months of work as well as their blood, sweat, and tears into developing a proposal to create a charter school when there's no clear end date to the process. So we support the proposal with the proposed amendment for 15 business days so that everyone, authorizers, school developers, will know where they stand and can move forward to the next steps, whether it's to resubmit the new affidavit or to move forward with the school. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Piccolo. Are there any questions from the would the department care to comment on the bill?
Mr. Chair, members, Kevin McHenry, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Education. We just wanted to add some brief comments here. We do appreciate Representative Slocum bringing this bill forward. We do understand that this the final decision is not in statute, and we appreciate the willingness to turn this into 15 business days. We think it's really important to make sure that the statutes are consistent. For example, we do have, for final decision, we have 15 business days for our authorizer application. This bill addresses the initial affidavit. We also would like to continue working with Representative Slocum for having a final decision on the supplemental affidavit as well. One of the things, as Representative Slocum pointed out, is that our Charter Center team does spend some significant time on these affidavits and the revisions. Sometimes, I agree with Representative Slocum, sometimes they are very, they're not as extensive revisions. Sometimes they're even more extensive. What our charter school team does is spend some significant time with the authorizers. A lot of times it's making sure that there are some clarifications, and it does take some extra time. We do strive to have a quick turnaround time, but with the amount of work that the Charter Center team is working on, sometimes it's difficult to meet that specific deadline that we have set for ourselves, and also makes it more difficult for us to work with authorizers. So instead of just simply refusing or denying an affidavit, we actually try to do our best to work with them. So one of the just to make sure that one of the things that's out on the table for you all to understand is that with that date certain in there, there is a potential that there may be some less opportunity for our Charter Center team to work with the authorizer, and that may start the process anew. But we do think that it is important to have a specific date certain in there as well. Thank you.
Members, any questions, thoughts? Mr. McHenry and Representative Slocum, I appreciate the posture that you're taking in terms of working through it. I think Mr. McHenry's points are a very important point, that at the end of the day, we're talking about creating a learning environment for our youth and our state, and so it's important that while there be good, expeditious, you know, processes, that there's also a high priority of making sure that we get that right up front. And so I appreciate the balance that you're trying to strive at. I would encourage you to continue the conversation and look forward to acting on this in the next couple of weeks. Thank you. Representative Slocum, any last thoughts before we lay the bill over? You can tell a story now.
Don't tempt me. I welcome your comments. If there is something that does need adjusting, please talk to me. I'm very open to that, and I appreciate you hearing the bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Slocum. At this point, the chair will move that House File 2010 be laid over for possible inclusion in out of this policy bill. Thank you for your testimony and for your bill this morning. Members, with that, we're going to move to House File 2180, Representative Aaron Murphy, and the chair will move House File 2180 be referred to Commerce. So that's the motion before us. We will be voting on that motion today. We also have several amendments that we'll be voting on as well. So good morning. Representative Erickson Sandra.
Mr. Chair, why wouldn't the motion be to refer it to Education Finance?
Representative Erickson, I'm going to punt that question over to Representative Murphy, and perhaps you can start off there, and then we'll have the testimony. We'll go through the bill. So, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Erickson. The bill will make a stop in Education Finance, but it has other policy committees to go through first, and we'd like to do that given the time or the deadlines of the House this year. So, it'll get plenty of hearings, and it will be in Education Finance.
Representative Erickson. Thank you. Thank you for the question. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm wondering if you, and I'm not sure how you like to do this, Representative Mariani, if you would like to take up the author's amendment first and then have testimony, or if you'd like me to begin with testimony.
Representative Murphy, I believe if the author's amendment puts the bill in the form that the author wishes to have it, that's been our custom and tradition. And so if that's your wish, I will then move.
It's the A1 amendment, Mr. Chair.
The A1 amendment. Members, should be in your packets. And Representative Murphy, if you can speak to that amendment.
I would be happy to, Mr. Chair. The A1 amendment is a housekeeping amendment. I will say before I get into a lot of testimony that we have been working with and talking with stakeholders to make sure that we pass a strong bill. And so the A1 amendment clarifies that when applying the open meeting law to decision making, that it is only applying that open meeting law to an advisory committee when it is dealing with health insurance matters. And it also clarifies or makes clear the timelines for when an RFP would be required. Make sure that we're not requesting them too often, and to allow for flexibility for the school districts if they wish to exceed more than 2 years.
Very well. Members, again, custom and tradition for us to adopt an author's amendment. We could certainly revisit the issue during the course of discussion of the bill and have a fuller conversation at that point. So with that, all in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and it's great to be here, and it's great to be here in the first week of this session, and I'm happy to join you today to talk with you about House File 2180, the Health Insurance Transparency Act. This proposal uses competitive bidding and transparent decision-making to address rising health care costs for local school districts and its employees. It builds on current procurement and competitive bidding processes already in practice in Minnesota. Between 2004 and 2013, school districts and its employees have seen health care insurance related costs skyrocket, even with restructuring of benefits. Whether districts purchase insurance through cooperatives, whether they self-insure, or attempt to get insurance on their own, they've all seen rising health care costs. Over the 2004 to 2013 period, average premiums have increased by 84%, average single deductibles rose by 263%, and average out-of-pocket maximums for single and family coverage rose by 58 to 60%, respectively. One of the significant drivers of these increasing costs is the absence of competition by insurance providers and inadequate bidding procedures, resulting in districts only getting one bid from one health insurance provider. And this is particularly true for smaller districts in greater Minnesota. Minnesota has always been an innovator and a leader in healthcare, and with this bill, we are applying competitive forces to the acquisition of health coverage to drive down costs. We're using this model in our public healthcare programs already, and we're driving a better deal for taxpayers. I hope we can drive that same better deal for our schools, building and strengthening the current bidding process already in place. Thank you. I hope that we have a lively discussion this morning. And with that, I'd like to introduce Brandon Radke.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. And at some point, I want to make sure we walk through the bill. And I can either have staff to do that for us, or I defer to the author if the author wishes to do that. I'm going to be challenged here, but I like it. I grew up in Chicago where, you know, there's names from all over the planet. So it's Mr.
Rutke.
Rutke.
Yep. All right. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. As stated before, my name is Brandon Rutke. I'm the Director of Public Affairs for Education Minnesota. Education Minnesota is always looking for ways that we can make health coverage for educators more affordable, fair, and predictable. We have worked on a variety of proposals over the last decade, and for those that have been around here for more than a decade know that we've had many of them through this committee or other committees. But today I want to talk to you about a new proposal we call the Health Insurance Transparency and Accountability Act, or HITA as we love acronyms at Education Minnesota. The Health Insurance Transparency and Accountability Bill would bring reforms to the way health insurance providers do business with our school districts and their employees. Focuses on creating competition and increasing the number of bids local school districts receive, and enacts good government reforms and protects members' premium dollars. The bill seeks to ensure competitive bidding process in two major ways. The first, it does so by requiring districts to request at least three different proposals for health insurance. And to ensure that every district gets at least one proposal, it requires that the Public Insurance Program, or PEEP, will be required to submit bids to every district. Second, the bill also requires that all health insurance bids go through a sealed bidding process based on the claims data and that they are submitted by a specific date. These will ensure that providers are putting their best foot forward from the start and basing their bids on usage data. The second, the bill enacts good government measures. In order to prevent even the appearance of any conflict of interest, the bill prohibits school board members and administrators from receiving gifts from people or organizations seeking to do business with that district. And then it also expands the open meeting law to committees or task force that service co-ops have related to health insurance. And finally, the bill protects premium dollars for educators by requiring that any premium surplus that is returned to districts be negotiated over or used to offset future premiums. And I want to be clear about a couple of things the bill doesn't do, which is it does not create a single statewide pool for school employees. That is a different proposal that we've had in years past. We still have it floating around in the legislature, and it's not that we don't think it's still a good idea, but we have a new proposal here to try to move something forward for our members. And secondly, it does not force a district into choosing any single plan. It leaves the decision-making up to the district. Our goal with the bill is simple. We want districts to get multiple bids. We want a sealed bidding process to open up the process and bring the best bids forward. And we want to let districts make the best choice for themselves. I know that you'll hear some concerns from others about the bill as it relates to making sure there's a level playing field and not favoring one provider over another. That is not the goal of our legislation. Education Minnesota has met with representatives from the administrators, the school board, service co-ops, and the health plans. As I mentioned in an email to one of the other stakeholders tonight, we have almost a whirlwind romance brewing right now. As we continue to negotiate and talk about ways that we can get a bill that everybody would be in agreement with. And I think the others' testimony today will reflect that. We are committed to continuing our discussions with other parties and authors to try to seek accommodations in language that hopefully meets everyone concerned. I think you'll see from the author's amendment that was added today and through many redrafts of the bill, we have tried to address concerns that other folks have brought up and make this something that's workable for most parties. We want to make sure as much money as possible is directed to students in the classroom. We believe this bill will create an open and fair bidding process so school districts and employees can get health coverage at the best price possible. It will save and safeguard public monies and will ensure premium dollars are used only for health insurance. I encourage you to pass the bill today, and we'll stand for any questions, and thank you for your time.
Wonderful. Representative Murphy, I'm wondering if perhaps this might not be a good time to ask our legal counsel just to quickly run through the bill. And I believe you have some other testifiers as well.
Mr. Chair, I think it would be great if Mr. Pender would walk through the bill, and then we do have two more testifiers.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Recky, hang around because there may well be questions for you as well. But Mr. Pender, welcome to our committee, Mr. Pender.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll go through the bill. There's a bill summary for me, and I'm going to kind of go through that. Section one of the bill deals with the PEEP program, Public Employees Insurance Program, and requires them to respond to a request for proposal from a school district within 60 days. Sections 2, 3, and 4 deal with service cooperatives and their status and procedures as far as dealing with the issues in this bill, health insurance. Section 5 deals with school districts and board members and school district employees receiving compensation based on decisions they might make dealing with group health insurance. Section 6 deals with charter schools and makes charter schools subject to the items that are covered in the sections of the bill that follow that, and then sections 7 through 11 deal with municipalities in general and how this law applies to those municipalities as far as their procedures for it's school districts is what it refers to, and how and the decision making for purchasing group health insurance, and section 11 simply says what the term local official means, and section 12 is an appropriation, and section 13 is the effective date, making the bill effective July 1, 2014.
Very well, thank you, Mr. Pender. Representative Murphy, I believe you have some other testifiers as well.
We do, Mr. Chair, and I'd ask Ms. Schaubach. We have one other testifier to join us.
Come up.
We might be able to, I don't know if there's some extra chairs here, and perhaps the page can help us pull an extra chair up to the table. Good morning.
Morning.
Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak with you this morning. My name is Bill Yurtstead. I'm president of the Elk River Education Association, representing more than 850 members in our schools. The Elk River Area School District encompasses the cities of Rogers, Zimmerman, Elk River, Otsego, and parts of some other smaller communities. And I've been an educator in that district for 39 years.
Service corps.
I want to focus today on the years from the year 2000 to the present, on discussing our story on insurance. You know, Elk River used the same insurance company and belonged to a co-op for as long as I could remember. During that time, our rates fluctuated greatly, including a 24% increase in 2001 and a 21% increase in 2007. The average rate increase from the year 2000 to 2009 was about 11%, into double digits. In 2001, health insurance costs were 5.5% of the total district compensation expenditures. By 2009, health insurance costs were 12.5% of the total district compensation expenditures, so it more than doubled during that period of time. The cost of the district and to the employees was greatly increased from 2000 to 2009. And since my members have a cap on insurance on as far as district contribution, when the insurance rates go up, my members take the full responsibility in paying the increase unless we negotiate a higher cap. In 2010, after reviewing the data that I just discussed with you, a decision was made by Elk River to pull out of the co-op. We were part of the co-op for all those years. We were able to do that because we're a very large district. We're the eighth largest in the state, have about 13,000 students. And so we had enough employees to pull out of the co-op, go out for bid. And as I stated before, we sought multiple bids in 2010, and we ended up changing our insurance company as a result. We did receive a bid from Peep at that time, but we chose not to go with that company, and I'm not going to name the companies here today. But we ended up going with a different one. During the first two-year contract with a new company, after going out for multiple bids, the first year we saw a 0% increase in our rate. This would not have happened if we did not go out for multiple bids. This was a true 0% increase, well, actually no increase, because when we went out for bids, we gave them specific specifications on our plan design. Everybody was bidding on the same plan, same specifications. So it was really a true 0%. In the 4 years since we went out for multiple bids, as I mentioned, we had a 0% the first year. In 2012, we saw a 4% decrease. We did see a spike in 2011 where it jumped up as a result of some high usage. However, we are currently in our third year, we're in our second year of a three-year contract with this company, and we have a 4% rate cap guarantee. Our rates cannot go above 4% of an increase. It's quite a change from the previous 9 years where we saw the average 11% with spikes as high as 24% increases. I just spoke with a leader from another metro area district yesterday who said his district recently saw multiple bids. They saw an 11% decrease. Elk River plans on seeking multiple bids again at the conclusion of this three-year contract. And seeking multiple bids has been valuable for Elk River. I hope you will support this bill so that all districts can see those types of savings. I want to thank you for allowing me to share our story with you today.
Thank you, Mr. Yerstadt. Representative Murphy, I'm just watching the clock a little anxiously. We do have some amendments that we want to get through. And so not only for your testifier, but for other testifiers as well, to keep that in mind. So please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I will be very brief. My name is Jennifer Shabak. I'm the Legislative Director for the Minnesota AFL-CIO. We are a labor federation made up of over 1,000 affiliate unions representing more than 300,000 working people throughout the state. On February 11th, our general board, the highest decision-making body of our organization, made up of 70 labor representatives from across the state, overwhelmingly passed a resolution in support of House File 2180, the Health Insurance Transparency and Accountability Bill. Rising insurance costs, as you've heard, are forcing school employees to pay more for diminished health care coverage. And the lack of true bids results in higher costs, not only to those employees, but ultimately to taxpayers. Ensuring a competitive bidding process is essential. This is how government operates with most, if not all, other contracts, including construction jobs. This is how the operating engineers and many of our trade unions of our trade unions do business in their private sector self-funded plans. When they put business out for bid, it is always sealed. They don't allow vendors to know what each other are bidding. They want the lowest price for the best service because their members' health care costs are directly at the expense of their wages. The Minnesota AFL-CIO strongly supports the passage of the Health Insurance Transparency and Accountability Bill, creating an open and fair bidding process, requiring competition so school districts and employees get health care coverage at the best price possible, safeguarding public monies, and ensuring premium dollars are only used for health insurance coverage. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Ms. Shabak. And thank you, all three of you, for your testimony. At this point, what I'm going to do is ask those who have signed up to testify with concerns about the bill to come forward. We're then going to move on to the amendments because members have crafted amendments. I want to make sure we spend time honoring the work of our members. And then hopefully if we move through those, we'll be able to have questions. I know I have about a half a dozen members who have indicated they want to ask questions, and perhaps some of those might come up during the amendment discussions. So with that, I'm going to ask Mr. Walseth, Ms. Sink, I hope that's correct, Mr. Mons, and Ms. Komet to come forward. And we'll start with Mr. Walseth's testimony. Good morning. Always good to see you.
Good morning, members, Mr. Chairman and members. Sam Walseth, representing 8 service cooperatives that are statutorily created public agencies doing business in greater Minnesota, insurance business, and insuring about a third of the teachers in greater Minnesota, actually across the state of Minnesota. We're here today in a spirit of collaboration, working with the author and the advocates of the bill to try and get a bill this session. I sat before many committees last year testifying and arguing for a competitive health insurance market for school employee insurance, and to date that market still exists. You've heard proponents today talk about enhancing that competitive bidding market, and I think in that spirit we'd like to work together this year on amendments to make this bill workable for everybody, and that's the spirit I'm hearing today. And I testified to that in Senate Commerce yesterday as well, Mr. Chairman. To be brief, cognizant of time, but I do need to go through a few provisions of the bill as they relate to my client and the process that's laid out before you. Looking at sections 2 and 3, the open meeting law as it applies to advisory council, advisory committee activity. We appreciate the author's amendment to narrow the scope of that open meeting law to the advisory committees and councils, specifically dealing with insurance business, not every single one of the advisory councils and committees that service cooperatives currently utilize. I would note for the record that case law does exist that says advisory councils and committees are not subject to the open meeting law. In the spirit of openness, we're here today to say we can live with that. I do want, though, for the advocates of the bill to consider something. Those advisory committees are made up of school employee staff, management, governance members currently. And when you convert this to a publicly posted process, open it up to anyone from the public to come in, I understand that on one side, some group wants to show up and say some things, but I'd ask the advocates to consider who else might show up and want to talk about school employee benefits to those meetings. So I just put that as a question to the advocates for something to consider. What the other consequences might be of adding that open meeting to an advisory committee. Moving to Section 4, we support the language of requiring some bargaining to take place over claims margin returns or refunds that go back to districts. The question I have for council and you folks is, by placing that language in the service cooperative statute, are you only covering the teachers in service cooperatives? As I mentioned, it's about 30% of the market. And if the intention is to have that benefit extend to all teachers, would that language be better placed in a broader school district authority or collective bargaining statute? So I just raise that as a question for council, because I think the intent is to make sure that's a benefit that extends to all teachers in Minnesota, not just the ones represented in cooperative pools. We would also recommend that you add a subdivision to the service cooperative statute that you would find in House File 1552, and that has actually passed the House of Representatives in the past. That would require disclosure by the service cooperative to the exclusive representative of a refund that is going back to the district. We think disclosure in the spirit of transparency is good public policy. We think you should add that to our statute. So before that check goes back to the district, we're going to let Representative Sawatzky know that it's coming her way. We think that's good governance, good transparency. We would just ask you to consider that too. In Section 5, this deals with kind of the conflict of interest and prohibition of special compensation. Again, just for advocates to consider, does the language end up prohibiting wellness incentives as a form of compensation? And many of you are aware that a lot of health plans now will cover, if you go to the gym 8 times a month, they'll pay for your gym membership. Does that get prohibited with that language? I don't know the answer to it, Mr. Chairman, but I come here today with a question. I think that's a benefit that if our teachers were to lose that, you would probably hear some howling about that. Why did you take that away? So I just ask advocates to consider that as well. Section 6 adds charter schools to this process. So we've often talked about 330 public school entities who will be in this new churning bid activity. You're adding 150 new entities to that bid process as well. So there will be a lot of bid activity. Mr. Chairman, turning to the heart of the bill, which is Section 10, creating a new Subdivision 8 in the bid statute, I would just note that in when it comes to aggregate claims and distributing aggregate claims, the service cooperatives have lived under that mandate since 2006. And I'm sorry, my friend Representative Davney is in here, because I'm going to reference a Davney amendment to the service cooperative statute that was added that made that requirement in 2006. We want to keep that. That's Chapter 123A.21, Subdivision 12, Clauses A, B, and C. Clause C is the aggregate claim statute. We want to keep that. Clauses A and B, we would like other committees and legislators to consider removing those two clauses that relate to bid activity for the service cooperatives, because we want to live under whatever rules everybody else is going to live under the new Subdivision 8. And so that old amendment in the co-op statute, we think if this is going to be the new process for everybody, we'd like to see those two clauses revisited and potentially removed from our statute, and we'll be living under this one as well. Just kind of looking through my notes, Mr. Chairman. There is a little loophole in the PEEP statute that Commerce Committee and Senate took out yesterday. I think the intent is all the carriers, co-ops, PEEP, all the health plans are going to live under Subdivision 8. Chapter 43A.316, Subdivision 10, the last clause in the PEEP statute does say that PEEP is actually exempt from this chapter. 471-6161, which would include the new Subdivision 8, which is going to outline this new bid process. We think if the spirit is, and I've talked to advocates of the bill, and I think they're acknowledging that is an unintended loophole. It's that, again, it's old language that's been in the statute for a long time. If we're moving to this new process and it is going to be fair is fair, everybody's operating on that, on the new Subdivision 8, then we'd like to see that little phrase of the PEEP statute eliminated as well, so they are in fact not exempt from what we're doing here. And then, Mr. Chairman, I think there's probably got other advocates here to talk about other aspects of the bill. I just want to focus on the subsidy to PEEP. $1 million is a significant subsidy to one carrier to handle what we consider the day-to-day cost of doing business. And I know advocates of the bill will say, well, they're going to be required to give those bids, and that's a lot of activity. My client does handle a significant amount of bid activity as well on behalf of several hundred school districts, potentially charter schools, and actually cities and counties. There's well over 600 local government bids that we're cooperatively going out to bid for. That's a lot of activity. We've never come before the legislature and asked you for an appropriation to assist with that cost of doing business. And it is a cost of doing business. It's time, energy, and money. I'm here today to ask that as the bill goes forward, that any subsidy to the carriers, to a carrier, be equalized to all carriers. We would recommend that subsidy of taxpayer dollars to be zero, but if you are going to spend taxpayer money on helping with the bid process, that it is part of the fairest fair, that subsidy be equalized. And so, Mr. Chairman, with that, I'll stand for questions, but I want to get those issues on the table. I understand it's going to be a long process, a lot of committee hearings, and we didn't prep any amendments today, but we want to kind of serve notice today about those would be some of the amendments and changes we'd like to work on as the bill goes forward. That, Mr. Chairman, I'll wrap up my comments.
Very well. Mr. Walsa, thank you for your very thorough and very thoughtful testimony. I note that Representative Murphy was taking notes, and I suspect that Chair Marquardt was doing the same as well.
All right.
With that, we have members. What I want to do is get to the amendments inside of 5 minutes. I know that's going to put a crimp on what the testifiers, but this is not the last committee in which this bill is going to be heard and/or debated. So, please help us out. Keep that in mind. I'm going to call on Ms. Sink, Julie, to offer your testimony, and then Mr. Mons. So, please.
Good morning. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Julie Sink. I'm the Director of Business Affairs for Prior Lake Savage Area Schools. And we're a district of 7,500 students, over 1,000 employees. 4 years ago, our district decided to go to a self-insured model of health insurance, and which is totally different from fully insured, and I believe it's different for this bill. Our premiums go into a special fund in the district to be only used for health insurance, and our claims are paid from that fund. What we go out to bid for are those items such as the third-party administrator fees and any stop-loss fees. So anything for our district, anything over $200,000, we have basically a reinsurance that we pay a premium for. Those are the items that we are looking for bids that we do on an annual or semi-annual or every other year basis for receiving bids to keep our costs down. For the past 4 years, our premiums have only gone up 1.625% each of the past 4 years as an average. And this next year, we're facing a zero. And so we're wondering how this bill affects us having to compare self-insured models to a fully insured, where we're asking them to bid on the claims that we have. We know what our claims are for the past 3 years, and we know what those are specifically, and that's what we base our premium increases on, which have been very small, obviously. But we're wondering how that, it's really apples to oranges when we're comparing self-insured models to a fully insured model. We have built our reserve up to protect our district, so anything that we've, that our claims haven't been as high as our premiums and our other costs, that stays in that special fund, and that money is if our claims, we do have a bad year, that goes to help offset any future premium increases. And so that fund, we have built that up along the last 4 years to almost 50% of our total premium cost. That stays with in that fund. It can't be used for anything else. And as another aside, the cost, if our premiums would have went up 5%, that's an increase of about $350,000 cost to our district. That money no longer has to go towards premiums. That stays in our classrooms for our students. And so we are concerned that we have to apples to oranges here with a fully insured plan. Also, one other thing, you're asking major health providers in our district to provide that in 60 days time for all school districts in the state of Minnesota, and we have some concerns about them all being done at the same time. and that cost of $1 million going to PEEP, we certainly would like that coming directly to the schools, if at all possible, and having that stay with us, and at the cost of having to prepare RFPs every other year, those types of things, we'd like to see that coming back to the district instead of going to a separate entity.
Thank you, Ms. Thank you for your conciseness as well. We have about 3 minutes. Mr. Muntz.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and the committee for the opportunity to speak. Just want to elaborate slightly on what my colleague, Ms. Sink, said. My name is Matt Mons. I'm the Director of Human Resources for the Prior Lake Savage Area School District. And just to talk briefly about that bid process, when we're looking at bidding out as a self-insured district, what we're looking at is we're looking at the admin fee of the carrier that we're talking to, and we're looking even more so at what are the discounts that they've negotiated with the drivers of cost within our plan. So that means what kind of discounts have they negotiated at local clinics, with local physicians, with the RX plans, the prescription plans that are available to us. So that's where we're going to see our savings if we were to switch providers. And so it is very difficult to think about receiving a rate back from a fully insured plan and trying to compare that with the analysis that we need to do on discounts within the networks that we use with our cost providers. So that's certainly a challenge, and I'm not quite sure how we would navigate those waters. The other concern that we would have would be with the timelines here. One thing that's very important to self-insured district and any district is that we look at two different things with our claims data. We look at a 24-month claims history, and then we also look at our current year's claims history. And that current year is used to really make sure that you're not going way over or way under when you're electing your premiums for the next year. And in a self-insured model, we do actually elect our own premiums. They're not given to us by a carrier. And so with that 150-day time limit that is in the legislation or the bill before you, there is a concern that we will not have enough of our current year data at that point to make a really educated decision on what our rate increases should look like for the following year. We'll have our 24-month data. We'll be in the ballpark. But in terms of making that really good decision for the immediate future, it's difficult to do because in February, which is when we need to be collecting that data and sending it out, we would only have data from July through November of that plan year. So that would be another concern that we would have as a self-insured district.
Thank you, Mr. Mons. Ms. Kmet, I'm going to pretend we have a couple of minutes left.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And while I was listening to the other testifiers, I was busily editing my testimony down.
Thank you.
Members of the committee, good morning. My name is Catherine Kmet, and I am the Director of Policy and Government Affairs for the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. The council is a trade association that represents Minnesota's 7 nonprofit health plans. On Tuesday, thank you for the opportunity, by the way, to testify on House File 2180. I appreciate it. On Tuesday, my executive director, several of my colleagues, and I met with Brandon Retke and Denise Specht from Education Minnesota to discuss this bill. It was a very productive meeting, and we got a much better understanding of the intent of the bill. At the meeting, Education Minnesota told us that one of the concerns the bill was meant to address is to require carriers to bid on school districts. We shared with them some of the changes that have occurred as a result of the Affordable Care Act. In particular, there are new rules that went into effect on January 1st that require health plans to respond to any individual or group, small or large, that requests a bid for coverage. This requirement is called guaranteed availability of coverage in federal parlance. In Minnesota, we refer to it as guaranteed issue, but it is the same thing. As a result, this change in federal law fixes one of the big issues that this bill is attempting to address. That is to ensure that school districts that are shopping for health coverage can get a bid from any insurer that they wish, and that the insurance carriers must respond to any request for a bid for coverage by an individual or any employer, period. Regarding the language relating to the sealed bid process, we would like to see it amended to ensure there's a level playing field for any health insurance carrier that provides a bid, including PEEP. In order to be a truly competitive market for the benefit of the consumer, no entity should have a special advantage over another. We've mentioned this issue to Representative Murphy, and we are working on amendment language for the Commerce Committee. Section 12 of the bill gives PEEP $1 million, as it has been stated, to pay for the cost of preparing bids, which is what my health plan members do every day. Last year, PEEP responded to nearly 200 RFPs and requests for bids without this appropriation. We do not see any need for this appropriation. An appropriation of $1 million to PEEP gives them a distinct advantage over the private sector and makes for an unlevel playing field. We would also like to limit the scope of the bill to apply to school districts that purchase coverage in the fully insured market and to exempt districts that self-fund their health insurance costs. I think there might be some confusion about that, but I would just direct the committee's attention to the language that's on line 7.9 through 7.10 in the bill, where it specifically states that the provisions must apply to self-insured plans as well. Self-funded districts assume the financial risk themselves. They only seek bids to administer the health plan coverage. Those are very different situations from school districts that purchase coverage from a carrier in exchange for premium. And just want to say one more thing about some of the comments that were made earlier about how expensive health insurance is. We understand that. That's our business, and we work very hard every day to try to make those costs more affordable for individuals and employers all across the state. Our premiums, however, do reflect the cost of health care, and the rising cost of health care is what is driving premiums today, and we really collectively need to work together to address the rising cost of care. So thank you for the opportunity to testify. We want you to know that we are working with Representative Murphy, her staff, and the staff at Education Minnesota to address our concerns and make the bill better. And I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you, Ms. Commit.
Members, we have several amendments before us. Does anyone wish to move the A2 amendment?
Mr. Chair, that's my amendment. I move the A2 amendment.
Senator Erickson moves the A2 amendment. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The A2 amendment would move the effective date from 2014 to 2017. Because that is when we expect the Federal Affordable Care Act to be fully implemented, and I think we need to be in line with that considering the changes, even some that were just referenced in the testimony. I would ask for your support and ask for a roll call.
A roll call being requested. There shall be a roll call. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Erickson. I would ask that we not support this amendment today. For a couple of reasons. First and foremost, this is a bill about market forces, competition, and transparency, and applying it in Minnesota, which certainly can happen and should happen within the construct of the Affordable Care Act as it is implemented in Minnesota. Minnesota has always struck out its own course. It has always been a leader and an innovator in healthcare, and I think this proposal that we're considering today is another iteration of just that. And I don't think that we need to hold up the idea of competition and transparency while Minnesota proceeds with the ongoing implementation of the Affordable Care Act. And so, therefore, I think we should take advantage of what we know in Minnesota and move forward. And so I'd ask you to vote no, respectfully.
Very well. Representative Erickson?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I would disagree with that because MNSHR is also experiencing changes every day, and I think we need to take into consideration what's happening in our own state, even though we have a hybrid. And so I again would ask for your support.
Thank you. Will the clerk please take the roll?
Chair Mariani?
No.
Vice Chair Barnett? Representative Erickson?
Yes.
Representative Anderson?
Yes.
Representative Barrett?
Yes.
Representative Benson?
No.
Representative Bly?
No.
Representative Dabney?
No.
Representative Erickson? Roger?
No.
Representative Faust?
No.
Representative Isaacson?
Nope.
Representative Keel?
Yes.
Representative Crescia?
Yes.
Representative Leidiger?
Yes.
Representative Marquardt?
No.
Representative Morgan?
No.
Representative Nornes?
Yes.
Representative Sawatsky?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
Sure.
Representative Wills?
Yes.
Representative Yaruso?
No.
Members, we're going to revolt. We're a little rusty on this end. The clerk will please retake the
Chair Mariani?
No.
Thank you.
That way.
Vice Chair Beiner? Representative Erickson, Sandra?
Yes.
Representative Anderson?
Yes.
Representative Barrett?
Yes.
Representative Benson?
No.
Representative Bly?
No.
Representative Dabney?
No. No.
Representative Erickson Roger?
No.
Representative Faust? Excused?
No.
Absent?
Just pass over. We haven't closed the roll.
Representative Isaacson?
No.
Representative Keel?
Yes.
Representative Crescia?
Yes.
Representative Leidiger?
Yes.
Representative Marquardt?
No.
Representative Morgan?
No.
Representative Nornes?
Yes.
Representative Sawatsky?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
Yes.
Representative Wills? Representative Yaruso?
No.
Representative Faust?
No. Again?
Party line. Nine. And all it is fails.
Members, on a vote of 9 ayes and 12 noes, the motion does not prevail. Does someone care to move the A3 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I move to move the A3 amendment.
Very well. The A3 amendment is before us. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Murphy, the reason I have this amendment out here today is because we like to toss around these words, and I've heard them several times this morning: market forces, competition, and transparency. But yet, anytime I see the government put some things out there that say that the words must, that worries me. And I think just changing one simple word in this for this amendment from must to may, on page 7, verse 9. Can really level the playing field for that the intent of this transparency. So I move that for support of this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Anderson, very much for that. So the amendment does make permissive the seeking of a bid from PEEP. The bill asks that school districts seek 3 bids, but they don't necessarily require the acquisition of 3 bids. We do want to make sure that school districts have an opportunity to see more than one bid. And the way that we're doing it in this piece of legislation is requiring a bid from PEEP so that there are probably at least, if not more, than 2 bids. And I think it's important that the school districts are able to see that kind of competition. And that's why I think it is important to require a bid from PEEP. They are doing quite well in terms of costs for their members. And I would like the school districts to be able to see that. And that is why I think it is important that we require a bid from PEEP. And so I would ask that we oppose the amendment, please.
Representative Anderson.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I appreciate that, but I would expect that PEEP would be right out front trying to get into the market without being mandated to do this. So if there's an open bid, I expect PEEP to submit something like that and not to have to be mandated to do that. That's why I figure, well, why wouldn't anybody support the word may?
And, Mr. Chair, I know we're short on time, but our experience thus far has not suggested that in many places school districts are acquiring multiple bids from private carriers, and you would expect that those private carriers would be vigorously trying to get into that market. And so I think what we're trying to do here today with this piece of legislation is to say we think competition here is important. We think that PEEP will offer a bid when required, and we think that will make sure that the districts have multiple bids before them, and it will give them more options. And that is why I think it's important that PEEP be required.
Representative Erickson?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to call a roll call on this, please.
Roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani?
No.
Vice Chair Barnett?
Pass.
Representative Erickson?
Sandra? Yes. Yes.
Representative Anderson?
Yes, please.
Representative Barrett?
Yes.
Representative Benson?
No.
Representative Bly?
No.
Representative Dabney?
No.
Representative Erickson Roger?
No.
Representative Faust?
No.
Representative Isaacson?
No.
Representative Keel?
Yes.
Representative Kreisha?
Yes.
Representative Leidiger?
Yes.
Representative Marquardt?
No.
Representative Morgan?
No.
Representative Nornes?
Yes.
Representative Sawatsky?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
Yes.
Representative Wills?
Yes.
Representative Yaruso?
No.
On a vote of 9 ayes, 11 noes, and 1 pass, the motion does not prevail. Does anyone wish to move the A5 amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I move the A5 amendment.
Mr. Erdahl moves the A5 amendment. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill places limitations on school boards and school districts on receiving gifts while negotiating. It seems reasonable that if we are concerned about undue influence on school boards, the same provision should be extended to bargaining agents or teachers involved in the process.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And Representative Erdahl and I had some discussion about this prior to the committee, or just as the committee was coming together and Representative Murphy M. was testifying. And I understand Representative Erdahl is suggesting here. And I did have an idea about a secondary amendment to narrow what Representative Erdahl is suggesting. So I want to make 2 points. And I understand that there's a 24-hour rule in place. And so my oral amendment would not be in order. And I respect the chair in that request, but I do want to make sure that the committee understands my thinking on this so that if we proceed in this vein that you understand where we're going to land as we proceed. First and foremost, I think that it's important to recognize that what we're trying to do is make clear who has decision-making authority, and I don't believe that an exclusive representative has the same or equal decision-making authority over these decisions as does a school district a superintendent or an elected school board member. And so they're not an apples and oranges partner or participant in this process. And the way that Representative Erdahl's amendment is drawn up right now, it would broadly extend beyond any discussions dealing with health care or health care decision making. It would broadly extend beyond that. And so I want to let you know that if we are to proceed with this, I would want to add the language, who has decision making authority over school districts' group insurance coverage purchasing, to modify what Representative Erdahl is describing. Many people who have come up and testified today talked about fair is fair, and I do think that it is important that we are being fair in this proposal, and we're recognizing who's got decision-making authority and how that decision-making authority is being applied. And my concern is, as the amendment is drafted right now, it's just far too broad. What I would prefer is not to adopt it today, to adopt it down the line, so you and I could work that out, Representative Erdahl, in good faith. So I would ask today that we not add the A5. But if the committee feels strongly about it and you choose to go in another direction, then I want you to know that I will be amending Representative Erdahl's amendment down the line to make sure that we are not unduly tying the hands of people who have that this would not and should not apply to down the line. And my concern is right now it's just too broad.
Representative Verde.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think it's important, you know, that we get on the record with our feelings on this. I do not have a problem with tightening this up, as Representative Murphy has said needs to be done. That was not our intent in doing this. It was particularly tightening up this particular process regarding school health insurance. And so I have no problems. I mean, I wish we could add her amendment now. But I do think that it would be advisable that we have a position on this that could be tightened up.
Very well. So I really appreciate both of you having this conversation prior to the bill. It sounds like there is bipartisan agreement around what the appropriate parameters are here. Unfortunately, we do have a rule, and this is a significant enough, you know, adjustment that it's the chair's call that we not amend the amendment at this point.
And
I would hope, regardless of what happens with the bill, that you continue your discussions going forward.
Mr. Chair, I will commit here to work between now and the Commerce Committee to get the amendment that Representative Erdahl is suggesting into the shape with the secondary amendment and offer it as an office amendment in the Commerce Committee next week, if that pleases the committee, if that is the direction that you're headed.
Good to have that on the record, Representative Murphy, Representative Isenson. Yes. All right. So with that, all in favor of the A5 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Is anyone going to move, wish to move the A7 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I would like to move the A7 amendment.
So Krisha moves the A7 amendment. Representative Krisha.
And Mr. Chair, thank you. And Representative Murphy, thank you for bringing the bill up. I absolutely appreciate the spirit of what we're trying to accomplish here. This amendment comes actually out of a direct situation that I had in my hometown. It's similar. It's contract procurement. I have a snowplow company that actually was submitting for bids, and because of an error that had happened at the state level, we were excluding John Deere versus the Caterpillar, and it was a very, very tough process, and it took us a while to unwind it. And so the reason I'm offering this amendment is to allow for increased communication, to allow us to work through some of these problems before they become an issue. As I read this bill and as I see this amendment, the sealed bids come in, they're opened up in an open way, but then we have to take those. This amendment will allow the school district, allow you, the union representative, allow the administration to look at those, find out if there was any human error, because we all do those, maybe there was a miscommunication, and go back and make sure there was clarification so that the school district and the union all can agree on what the best possible health plan would be. So I ask you to look at this amendment and to accept it.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Prichin. It would be fun if we were looking at the menu right now.
I'm sorry, I apologize.
That's okay. So I've thought a lot about this this issue, not only because of your amendment, but because it has been a subject of some discussion as we have been working on this piece of legislation. And I have looked to how we do the sealed bidding process here in Minnesota. And so I am not ready to accept the amendment as it's drafted because I don't think it is conditioned enough. I think that, you know, we're asking right now for sealed bids to come forward, to ask those who want to make a bid to do their best work, offer their best offer for the school district so that they can the school districts consider that. And I think that that is, if I look and I've done some, you know, research on how we do bidding and procurement in Minnesota, that is the way that it's done. What I am concerned about is that if it's not drafted properly or not narrowly enough or not conditioned in such a way that it creates a level playing field and fairness on the back end, that anyone who is interested could offer a bid of any sort, inflated or not, just to get into the game. And then once those bids are opened up, then a negotiation among those parties, all of those parties, could ensue. And I don't know that we would necessarily be getting to a place that is better than today in terms of a negotiation for the school districts. It made me think a little bit about taking a test. For instance, if you take a test and you get your score back, and then after your score, you know, you've done your best work, and you get your score back, and then once you get your score back, you can look at, you know, your classmates' work and alter your test results and then get your score again. I want to make sure that the school districts are getting their very best deal, right? I really do, for the school districts, for their employees, for the property taxpayers. And I'm not clear yet, based on your amendment, that that will yield that result. And so I would ask that you and I continue to work together, but we not adopt this today, and instead see if we can find a path to make sure that the sealed bidding process yields the best price for the school districts, but there is room for negotiation after the fact if there is an error in the process or more information that's necessary. And with that, members, I'd ask that we vote no today.
Okay, Representative Krisha, we'll get back to you, but several other members want to weigh in here. And I do want to remind folks that we're past our normally scheduled time to adjourn. Representative Erdahl and then Representative Erickson Roger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Murphy, I'm just wondering, under the sealed bid process, does the low bid have to be accepted, or in the case of health insurance, could it, if there's benefits that are better in another plan and but the price is a little bit higher, can they accept that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, it is the discretion of the school district to choose.
Okay. Mr. Chairman,
question, Representative.
So if a school district likes their plan, they can keep their plan.
Representative Erickson Rogers.
Representative Krisha, does this mean that when they open up the bidding, this would then start a negotiation process, or could start a negotiation process? It seems like it would be a real expeditious way to get a contract settled. I've been in prolonged negotiations, and I can just see this as another way to not get a contract settled.
Representative Krisha.
Thank you, Chair Mariana, and thank you, Representative Erickson. Great question. I actually see this a continuation of the negotiation process. My concern in this is that we're not getting the best deal for the insurance company, that we're getting the best deal for the school district. And I'll give you an illustrative example. If PEEP were to submit a bid and it were also to come in from a couple of health partners, and in that, through the negotiation process with the union and the employees, they were to say, we want these benefits that are not in PEEP, this would open that negotiation process to go back to PEEP to say, you know what, you missed some sections here. Can you clarify, and can we see if we can get a better deal for our employees? So to me, this is really about continuing that so that we can get to right to the heart of what these families would like for health insurance. And with that, Chair, I'd ask for a roll call.
A roll call has been requested. A roll call will be taken. Representative Urso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a just ignorance question directed at whoever knows the answer. in a sealed bid process, if, as Representative Crecia has outlined, there is discovered that has been some omission of information in the process or something, is it possible for the district to reject all of the bids and request a second round?
That wasn't directed at anyone. Representative Crecia?
Thank you, Chair. And I don't have, in what I've been through in the bidding process, you can reject the bid process, as I understand. But more importantly, what happens is someone may get rejected and they not know why when they could have fixed it. And the other thing that I think we have to consider here is, who don't we trust? We have a group of people that we've elected. We have union representation. We have school board members. We have administrators all trying to do the best thing. Who don't we trust, and what kind of deals do we think they're trying to cut? Let them have the negotiation process. Let them do what we put them in place for.
Very well. Roll call has been taken. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani?
No.
Vice Chair Brenner?
No.
Representative Erickson?
Yes.
Representative Anderson?
Yes, sir.
Representative Barrett?
Yes.
Representative Benson?
No.
Representative Bly?
No.
Representative Dabney?
No.
Representative Erickson Roger?
No.
Representative Faust?
No.
Representative Isaacson?
No.
Representative Keel?
Yes.
Representative Crecia?
Yes.
Representative Leidiger?
Yes.
Representative Marquardt?
No.
Representative Morgan?
No.
Representative Nornes?
Yes.
Representative Sawatsky?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
Yes.
Representative Wills?
Yes.
Representative Yaruso?
No.
A vote of 9 ayes and 12 nays, the motion does not prevail. We have the A8 amendment. Representative Wells, is that your amendment?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I would move the A8 amendment.
Very well. Representative Wells moves the A8 amendment. Representative Wells.
Thank you. And first, I had a question just on clarification. I'm remembering the bill that we heard in State Government Finance and Veterans Affairs similar to this last session, and Mr. Retke had alluded to the fact that this was a different bill, that bill had tried to create a statewide pool, and that this bill is looking more for a competitive bid process. And so I guess I'm just a little confused and wondering, just for clarification, if maybe Mr. Retke could address this quickly before I get to the amendment. Does this mean that we're not pursuing the other bill that we had heard in State Government Finance and not pursuing a statewide pool anymore, or what's the goal here?
Mr. Retke.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wills, I would say this bill is not pursuing a statewide pool. This bill is pursuing changes to our bidding process to try to ensure multiple bids. As an organizational position, Education Minnesota still believes that the creation of a statewide pool for school employees is the best long-term solution for expanding coverage and lowering costs over the long term for the vast amount of our educators across the state. So from a standpoint of our organizational position, we still believe in that, but this bill is focused on trying to make some changes to the bidding process on how districts are getting bids to ensure that we have multiple bids and that districts can make good decisions for their employees.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Wills, that decision really rests with Representative John Ward, the author of that bill.
Representative Wills.
Thanks. I appreciate the clarification, just because we had heard that bill last year, and I just wanted to understand the difference between the two bills. And then just a comment about the self-insured districts, the school districts that we heard from this morning in Prior Lake and Savage, and then my own school district, District 196 in Apple Valley, Egan, and Rosemount. I'm hearing great success stories with the self-insured route, and in my district, we were able to save $6.5 million last year with no premium increases for employees, And then for this year, we're anticipating another $4.5 million in savings with only a 2% premium increase. So I just want to be cautious in pursuing this legislation and in the concerns of comparing apples to oranges when there are several districts pursuing the self-insured plan, like we heard from testimony today. So those are just some thoughts and comments I wanted to share with the committee. But to get to my amendment, because I know we're running short on time, the amendment that I'm offering today looks at the language about the 60-day deadline for PEEP to submit their proposal when it's requested by the school district. And I think it's a great idea to have that deadline so we can make sure that they're getting that information in a timely manner. But I'm concerned about the other providers are not being included in that deadline and whether the school districts will get all of the proposals back in a timely manner. So all of my amendment does is it includes all providers that are being requested to send an RFP for an RFP to get that information into the school districts within 60 days. So it just levels the playing field and makes sure that it's fair for all of those providers. So with that, I would humbly request you to accept the amendment.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wills. I think the amendment also deletes subdivision 1. So it deletes the PEEP requirement, and for that reason, I would ask that you vote no.
And to clarify, the reason why it deletes the section and then adds the language, more or less we're just moving it. In the bill itself, section 1 is the language that talks about the 60-day deadline for PEEP, and then it just moves it into the context of that RFP proposal process in it's subdivision 8 under section 10. So it just puts it more in, I think, the more logical place in the process and in the bill language, and then includes PEEP as well as the other providers. Hopefully that makes more sense.
Representative Murphy, any further comments?
Mr.
Rocky.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wills, I think this also kind of goes to the point that Catherine had testified earlier with the health plans about under some of the new ACA requirements, their requirements to make bids. And I, as I think she mentioned and I mentioned, we are still talking about how that actually relates into this bill and could that have a change in the effect. And so I think there could be some further language down the line that would address your concern about that and could be brought up similar. But I think at this point it's a little premature, at least from our level of comfort, to move the bill like that. We at this point we wanted to say that they're that they require a PEEP bid and that PEEP is required to respond, and I am hopeful, as I've stated to the health plans, that we will get to that spot, and we're continuing to talk every day, but at this point we're just not quite there.
Sounds like some possible ongoing conversations. Members, are we ready to vote? Representative Leiden.
Were you going to do a vote on the bill and move it?
Is on that what the amendment.
Yes. On the amendment, I'm sorry.
Very well. Members, all in favor of the A8 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign?
No.
Motion does not prevail. And then our last amendment is the A9 amendment.
And I would ask to move that amendment.
Representative Crescia moves the A9 amendment. Representative Crescia.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. And just very quickly, Representative Murphy, and knowing the spirit of your intent and where your heart is, I look at this as something that will help us set the definition of how we proportional put these rebates. My example is, if you have a family, you have a partner, you have a couple of children, your cost could be higher than somebody who may just be a single. And so this would just go to make sure that when those rebates come back, they do it in the same proportionality that they went out, and that we make sure it's fair to the families and those that may have additional costs.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Crescia, thank you for that. I do want to make mention of Ms. Commit. I think it's Ms. Commit's testimony around a piece of legislation that was, or maybe it was Mr. Waltz's testimony on a piece of legislation that's already been heard. I think it's a Representative Zerwas bill, and there is a piece of language in there that I am looking at that is similar to this, but not as fixed. So instead of saying it just must be proportionately rebated back, it instead would say that the school district and the local representative, the exclusive representative, would have the ability to make those decisions locally together. And I think that would probably be a more subtle, more surgical way to approach that, but in the same spirit as you are describing. And so if it is okay with you, I would like to maybe have you withdraw this or vote this down if you'd like, but then pursue that other language because I think it's a better instrument to pursue that same spirit.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, and thank you, Representative Murphy, for that. In the spirit of that, let's just ask for a vote. I won't roll call it, and knowing that your intent is to fix this as we move forward, I appreciate that.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Crenshaw. All in favor of the A9 Amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion does not prevail. Representative Murphy, your bill is amended before us for final action on the part of this committee anyway. And I think, members, I think we gave the Commerce the Committee a run for their money. So if anyone's on Commerce, Representative Murphy.
I want to thank you all, Representative Mariani, Chair Mariani, and all of the committee members for giving us so much time on this piece of legislation today. As you've heard both from me and from many testifiers, we are at the beginning of a process. I do believe that we can bring forward through the legislature a strong and effective bill that will yield a better cost for health care for school districts and its employees and for property taxpayers, and that is my aim. And I am very eager to work with you, committee members and members of the legislature, of course, but also the stakeholders to make sure we can do that job. And I appreciate your indulgence, your time today, and I'd ask for your vote. Thank you very much.
Representative Murphy, my apologies to you. I kind of jumped ahead. I wanted to make sure that our minority lead had a chance to comment as well. So I'm gonna call on Representative Erickson Sanja, and also I know a number of other people may want to call, may want to speak. I defer to the committee. If I can hang around, but I at least want to make sure we hear from my minority lead, and then and you can either repeat your last comments or add new ones as close us out. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We all want the best deal possible for anyone who has health insurance, among them today our school employees. But this is a bill that limits competition. It doesn't open up competition, and it limits school negotiating power to get the best service insurance plans for our school employees. It is also problematic that this is going to force our charter schools, to whom we have given great flexibility, into a public pool. And that's very problematic from my perspective, and I would say on behalf of my members. The Affordable Care Act is an ever-changing, it's kind of like a moving target, and we should wait to see how it's going to play out on school employees. So the timing is not right for us to move forward with this kind of provision. And worst of all, this bill assumes that there's corruption, graft, and kickbacks by our school board's administrators, and there's no evidence to that. So with that, members, I would ask for a no vote.
Very well. Any other members that wish to comment? Representative Ryder?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As many of you know, I have serious reservations about this bill. I, at this point, am willing to support the bill's author in moving it forward with a clear understanding that a couple of areas need to continue to be worked on. One, Representative Erickson referred to the transparency requirements of this bill are narrowly applied to service cooperatives. That is not in the interests of good government. If you want to talk about good government, all entities related in this bill should be treated equally under whatever transparency requirements are appropriate. And I don't know how that would be done in relation to PEEP, but if there are insurance advisory councils of PEEP that meet, they should be subject to public meeting law in the same regard as service cooperatives. And that same type of parallelism, I think, is essential if you really want to have this sit as a good government bill. And the same issue around the $1 million that was mentioned earlier, just is that fair and balanced treatment of the entities involved? So those are my concerns, and I'm conveying that clearly to the author and in a public forum that while I will support this bill moving forward, I can't continue to support the bill unless some of those issues are addressed.
Well, Representative Leidinger.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. I also have to speak to this bill. I must oppose it. I know the intent is certainly to expand competitiveness, increase openness, but I also believe that this just does the opposite. Funneling the contracts to occur every 2 years on the even or on the odd year. I mean, what we're doing is we're funneling all the insurers to do all this work every 2 years. That's if I was a businessman, I would want to have a contract that has the option to do it for a 10-year run or a 5-year run. And we heard from Elk River, theirs was a contract of 3 years, and they probably got a great offer because of that. And the more years that a company has to do business with a client, the better the deal can usually occur. And we all know that. That's the way competitiveness is. That's how it works. The other piece of this is that $1 million going to PEEPS, we've heard that may give an unfair advantage to that organization. And I think the other organizations that would bid are not going to like that. So this funneling of, this structure and funneling it to every 2 years is not a good thing. You're not really opening up the market like it should. And I don't know of any other businesses that would want to put themselves into this kind of a restrictive, competitive situation. So I would oppose it because of that. But if you can work on that, you might get everybody on board.
Representative Barrett.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think my issues with the bill are many. One of which is we are appropriating $1 million of taxpayer money right out of the chute. So taxpayers are down $1 million right away, with no promise of any savings down the road. We know that some districts will actually be hurt by this. I know because I've talked to them. So districts I represent probably won't fare very well in this. And we're unsure of where the end game might be. The bill actually creates a bias in legislation under the guise of openness, which I'm not inclined to support. And so rather than asking a bunch of questions, I just think it... As we look at what's happened in healthcare in our country over the last couple of years, and we look at all the promises that have been made from a national level, and we look at some of those promises being broken regarding healthcare plans and whether you can keep them, to me, this bill doubles down on bad healthcare policy, and I cannot support that.
Representative Wills, did you have a final comment? I'm working off of an old list, so I want to make sure. Representative Grisham, did you?
Yes. Thank you, Chairman. Just a couple quick comments. As this bill continues to move forward and it looks like there's a many stops, I would just ask that in the interest of good policy, which is what our job here is, we look carefully at our two examples. We had the gentleman from Elk River and the woman from Prior Lake, and they've already established many of these provisions. They've already found what's working. And so before we get too far down the path of making another change to statute, maybe we should consider what have they done, how have they done it well, and let's allow our local school officials to pick the winners, because that's really their job. And let's just put good policy in place.
We have two members left, Representative Russo, and then Representative Morgan will close us out. And then we'll move to a vote on the bill after a few brief comments from Representative Murphy. Representative Russo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, we've heard some comments that somehow this bill would hurt a district, restrict competition, be a problem for a district that is self-insured, or cause a district to have to abandon something they think is working. And for the life of me, I cannot find any of those in the bill. Because although the district is required to ask for proposals and PEEP is required to respond to those requests, nowhere is there any language in the bill that requires a district to change their current supplier, to accept the bid from PEEP, there's no restrictions placed on what the district may do after those bids are received. So I'm baffled by the insistence that it's somehow going to hurt any of our districts. So I'm in favor of it.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Murphy, I really appreciate your attitude and your willingness to work with all the stakeholders on this group. I think anybody who was around here in 09 and 10 recognizes your history, especially with your work on general assistance medical care and trying to preserve that program. And the work that you did brought it was more than 100 votes on the House floor to support your work in that effort. And I look forward to seeing you continue to work with the groups that are concerned and bring forth a better and better bill as this moves along and address these concerns. I saw you taking notes over there, and thank you very much for your hard work, and I look forward to seeing the bill continue to move forward. Thank you, Representative Murphy.
Good segue to you, Representative Murphy.
Say that one more time.
That's a good segue to you.
It is, and I just have two brief comments.
Please.
In response to the testifiers, I want to be clear that I know in my testimony, in the testimony of the proponents, there has been no suggestion of fraud or allegations of fraud or kickback, so I just want to straight up reject that because while we may see, some may see that, that is not at play here. And then I do want to reiterate that in the author's amendment, we did change the contracting time so that there is flexibility for school districts to extend beyond 2 years. We did that in the author's amendment. And with that, again, thank you very, very much for your time, and I'd ask for your support.
Thank you. Members, I do want to do, I want to issue an apology to Mr. Petterstuen. I'm butchering your name, no doubt, HR Director from Rosemont Apple Valley, who wanted to testify. Given the time, I stuck with those who had prior put themselves on a list. And I do want to apologize to any other testifiers. We typically hear from everyone in the audience, but it's, as you know, we were pressed. We wanted to make sure that we were acting on the amendments that members had worked so hard to prepare for today's conversation. I think we had a very good conversation. At our next meeting, I want to introduce our new intern, Simon, but we'll hold off to the next meeting for you to tell us a little bit about yourself. And I do also want to thank Mr. Pender for joining us here today to go through the bill quickly. Members, this is what's really great about this committee is that we take the time that's necessary to have the conversations within the limitations of time and other constrictors that we have, and that's how you develop good public policy. And so I want to thank you all for your attention, your diligence, and the energy and honest sharing and pushing back and forth that you brought to this conversation today. So with that, the chair renews his motion that House File 2180 be referred to the Committee on Commerce. Right? I don't need to do this part. Committee on Commerce. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Murphy. Members, we stand adjourned. We'll see you all next week.